The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, after Yaya Touré, Villa a new one, and the Black Caps rip baggies asunder, what a final weekend in prospect. Every bit as exciting as the last reel of Lord of the Rings. You've blown up, Sauron. Now stop saying goodbye. Norwich, down, unless a side containing Ricky van Wolfswinkel can win 19-0. City champs, unless Big Sam Aladici comes up with another tactical masterpiece. You know what? It just might happen. Pod licks its lips, checks out Europe, where there are titles in the bag for PSG and Juventus, but not yet in Spain. Pod calls up Sid and leaves an excited message on his answering machine, and brings in tweets, posts, and jumps in early on the why Van Gaal won't work out bandwagon in this Football Weekly Extra. Jacob Steinberg joining us today on what is, Jacob, the final Football Weekly Extra of this season.
Very emotional.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. We will be doing shows over the next couple of Mondays and after the Champions League, and then, of course, in the build-up to the World Cup. But for now, Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
As we walk into history. And Man City walk into history as well.
Yes, it didn't look it.
I haven't said hello to Barry Glendinning before you start your match. Barry Glendinning.
He doesn't need a hello.
Hello, Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
All right, then. Off you go, Ian.
It didn't look like it was going to work out for Manchester City at first. And then you had this horrifying prospect in the background for Liverpool supporters that had Man City been held by Aston Villa 0-0, then that Crystal Palace game would have cost them everything. And you could almost feel Liverpool fans willing Man City to go on and score just to make sure that it didn't really matter. And if that's the case, they certainly did, because they pulled Villa's pants down.
They certainly did, didn't they?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That you think...
I think there were
Liverpool fans wanted Manchester City to win.
They obviously would have preferred them to lose, but I think the prospect of Manchester City drawing and meaning that Crystal Palace game was the game, I think was really, really upsetting.
But aren't we now facing a prospect so horrifying that if Manchester City lose on Sunday and Liverpool win,
the sky splits asunder.
The cloud of smugness, Allardycian and Liverpudlian smugness that will hover over this fine land will be so dense.
Mm. Render the northwest uninhabitable for what?
I would
50
imagine.
50 years.
Yeah.
Ago, yeah.
They'll have to just build a big concrete dome over the northwest.
Mm.
I believe that was Thatcher's plan originally, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mid-80s. Oh, managed decline. Cover it in concrete.
Mm. Well, a remarkable performance, certainly in the second half. And Yaya Touré at the heart of it, Jacob.
Yeah, he's my player of the season.
Is he?
Yeah, I think he's their best player, driven them to the title.
When he's on his game, how many other players do you actually need? I mean, you could play with what, nine
just
men?
Just one Yaya Touré.
One Yaya Touré and yeah. How many others? I mean,
one
seriously.
Yaya Touré, what equals 11 West Ham players or something like that?
It might not be that extreme, the equation, but I reckon if you had nine players, but Yaya Touré one of them, and on his game, like he was in that second half, you'd be fine.
You could probably just get 10 of us, you know, to fill space. The poor man can't cover every position, but just a kind of a load of blokes
silly.
From the pub.
Yeah.
And then Touré.
Yeah.
Against West Ham.
He is only the second central midfielder to score 20 goals in a Premier League season. Of course, Sir Frank Lampard, the other. He's the new Lampard, isn't he?
I mean, his goal last night was astonishing when you consider... the conditions and the lateness in the game. And there didn't seem to be ever any doubt that he was going to score it and just hammer it home. You know, he was no question that he put it wide or anything. And I agree with Jacob. For me, he's the player of the season. Luis Suarez missed the first six games of the season. He's gone off the boil a lot. Towards the end of the season, he was very poor against Crystal Palace, very poor against Chelsea. And he's failed to score against... any of the teams in the top four in six games. So I'm not suggesting he's a flat-track bully. I'm not sure why he was voted player of the year ahead of Touré. Perhaps it's because, the N-word, not that N-word, the narrative, which I hate, you know, it's a lot of people have been going on about his redemption.
Luis Suarez's redemption.
Yes, because being good at football means obviously certain other unpleasant characteristics he has displayed in the past have now been cancelled out, which I don't buy.
You can't answer your critics if your critics aren't criticising you for your lack of goals and then score goals and you've answered your critics. If they're criticising you for other things, you're not answering your critics with goals.
No.
Well, that's a fair point, Jacob. But absolutely, returning to the subject, Yaya Toure, extraordinary, as you point out, the conditions...
Just qualify, which is not to say Suarez hasn't had an excellent season.
Right.
Too late
for that, Barry.
Yeah, it is too late, isn't it?
It's a bit weird that Gerrard was ahead of him as well. I think Gerrard was second in that poll or vote.
That is surprising.
Yeah. Well, not very surprising, no, but given the context, but it's fairly ridiculous that he was ahead of Toure.
I think Liverpool have gone and spoiled award season by not winning the title, basically.
On the Yaya Toure issue, is he actually not pulling his weight? I mean, given what he can do, and even as you were pointing out yesterday, and Barry, the lateness of the day and the conditions and all that, and he can still make a run like that. Why does he only wake up sometimes? I mean, he could score. He seems to be able to score at will. And when you, I know this is kind of simplistic, but when you watch him, you just think, well, if it's that easy for you.
I think it's more just about exploiting the space at the end of the game. He did it against Newcastle when City won the title. And Pardew's Newcastle had kept City penned in for about 75 minutes. And suddenly a change was made and Toure was released. And that was it. There was no keeping up with him at that stage. Just at the end of the game where the lines get a bit torn, he's absolutely ruthless. And to make that run on that surface in that rain, I mean, the shirt alone, you've got the pictures on the papers, absolutely drenched. I know they're only made out of like glitter and butterfly wings these days, but that the weight that he must have been putting behind it to drive through the mud, it was very impressive and a little bit homoerotic.
It's now the 11th day that City will have been on top of the table this season, which is just 117 fewer than Arsenal, as Amy Lawrence was pointing out yesterday. But timing, very much everything.
They're a hard side to pin down, City, sometimes, because you sort of, they can do ridiculous things and lose to Sunderland away. They can draw with Sunderland at home and need a last-minute equaliser to get out of that. And you're sort of wondering, do they have much character at that point? You think, you know, this is a team that maybe, oh, it's a load of overpaid foreign mercenaries who just, they're in it for the money. And then, but sometimes when the going really gets tough, they can really pull it out the bag, as we saw in 2012. The pressure, when the pressure's on, you know, straight after Liverpool lose to Chelsea, City go and play at Palace, and obviously Chelsea lost at Palace, and Liverpool threw away a 3-goal lead, and there was never any question that City were going to win that game. They were 1-0 up after 5 minutes. It was easy for them. I think that says something about that team. They are, even though they haven't been on the top of the league for you know that many days, I think they are the best team.
All right. There's not much romance behind them on account of all the money. And we'll touch on financial issues perhaps in a second. But I think few could dispute that they are worthy winners. And Pellegrini, there, a very dignified man, has turned down the opportunity to criticise referees when decisions gone against him in big games, and done a decent job on what was his first season in a foreign league. Not easy.
No, absolutely. I mean, the only slip was that weird tantrum in Europe where he accused a Swedish referee of coming from a country that had no right to referee those of games, which was a real shame because apart from that, he's been absolutely flawless. But, I mean, you're dealing with a brand new team of players in a brand new league, a brand new language, brand new surroundings. It's never going to get the recognition that it might because of City's vast resources, because he's inherited a squad which doesn't really have any weak points at all. But he's done very, very well. And if nothing else, he gets to cast off that that label of being a sort of serial, maybe not loser, but he'd never won a trophy before that.
Oh, of course, he's not won it yet, though, has he? Because you mentioned 2012.
Sorry, he's won 9 trophies.
All right.
In Europe.
He hasn't won
He
hasn't won his 10th trophy yet, though, has he?
No, because he's got to play against
West Ham. And you mentioned 2012. This is shaping up to be every bit as exciting.
Yeah, but QPR had something to play for that day, whereas West...
Are you saying that...
QPR needed points, didn't they?
Right.
And West, yeah, so I think a big thing for them recently, City, has been the form of Edin Dzeko, who's very much risen to the occasion for them. See, I think he... had a couple of iffy seasons, to be honest, especially last year. Certainly didn't get on with Mancini, which, you know, his man management style certainly is in stark contrast to that of Pellegrini's, who's basically a much nicer man with his players. But I think, you know, the first half of the season, he couldn't get in the side that much because Aguero and Negredo were so good together. And then obviously that injury to Aguero, gave him a bit of a chance. And the last few weeks, two goals at Everton, a goal at Palace, breaks the deadlock last night. Doesn't necessarily score a lot of goals against the bigger teams, but he gets important goals in big games. Not a flat track bully, doesn't score when it's easy. You know, doesn't score the fifth goal in a 5-0 win, will score the one that breaks the deadlock like last night when it's looking difficult for City.
Well, fascinating clash with Andy Carroll on the cards in terms of you're looking forward to that, Jacob. I know. Here's a couple of stats for you. Sam Allardyce has not lost on the final day of the season since 2004.
Wow.
In another positive portent for Liverpool fans, I think, pretty sure myself and Max Rushton are broadcasting from Manchester on Sunday.
But you're not sure about this yet?
It hasn't been confirmed, but it seems very
where
likely.
Where in Manchester, Barry?
I don't know yet. It hasn't been confirmed.
All right, but are you going to be
it
at?
It will be either in or around the Etihad.
Oh.
Which would suggest that we'll almost certainly go to the wrong place and the title will go to Liverpool.
Wow. That's quite exciting. Although, City have beaten West Ham three times, and a draw is enough, of course, but they've beaten West Ham three times this season with an aggregate score of 12 to 1. And indeed, West Ham have not won a Premier League game at City since 2003. These figures meaningless, of course, meaningless. It's all about what happens in the 90 minutes on the weekend. And Ian?
We're clutching at straws, aren't we? They're going to get battered.
All right. Let's talk on then about the news that wasn't quite so good for City this week, which was the fact that UEFA have now come out and said what they're going to do about financial fair play. There are 9 clubs who have transgressed. 8 of those 9, including PSG, have accepted their punishment. PSG have basically held their hands up over that €200 million sponsorship from the Qatar Tourist Authority, which has got people flocking to Qatar, the weekend breaks. But they said, yeah, maybe we might have slightly exaggerated the figures there.
The only thing I would say is that the amount of publicity this fine is generating for Qatar Tourist Board is probably inflating the value every minute, because I keep hearing about the news. I suddenly want to go on holidays to Qatar.
Right, really?
It never even crossed my mind to do so before, but now that people keep mentioning that sponsorship deal, I'm like, Qatar, yeah, maybe, why not?
Well, I tell you what, we're talking about it now, and if the Qatari Tourist Authority wanted to ensure that we kept on talking about it, there'd be a surefire means of doing so. But anyway, so
for £250 million, I would get their brand name tattooed across my shoulders.
I think the word million is optional in that sentence. But, well, anyway, so they've accepted their punishment, which is even more draconian than the one facing City, because they are only going to be allowed to make one signing next summer. That's brilliant. So they get, I think it's a massive fine for them, isn't it? And they get the 21-man squad as opposed to 25. So their squad size for Champions League is reduced from 25 to 21, PSG, but they're only allowed to make one
signing. It's have to be homegrown as well. Yeah. You have to have homegrown players.
You still have to have your 8 homegrown.
8 homegrown players. Right.
So
now City, they don't have that, as far as I understand it, they don't have that restriction on how many players they can sign, but they do have a salary cap, is that right? Or is that?
There's talk of that, but I'm not even sure how they're going to make that work, because salaries are so broken up into signing on fees and loyalty fees and bonuses that I have no idea the skill of the accountants they're going to call in to do that.
But they got a massive fine, $50 million over 3 years, and the squad reduced from 25 to 21. Does that make a difference? City haven't used very many players this...
Well, their squad this season is only 24 in it. I was looking at it yesterday. In fact, trying to figure out who their 8 homegrown, in inverted commas, players are is incredibly difficult.
What do you have to do to qualify as being homegrown?
There are two different stipulations, one for the Premier League, one for UEFA. In UEFA, 4 of your players have to be club-trained and 4 must also be association-trained.
Mm. So house-trained? Do any of them have to be house-trained?
Well, hopefully they'd all be house-trained. Mm. A club-trained homegrown player is a player who, regardless of his place of birth, has been registered between the ages of 15 and 21 with his club for a period of 3 seasons or 36 months. So that would say Joe Hart, Dedrick Boyata, or
Guidetti, Lopez, Micah Richards. He'll be off.
And
that's the interesting thing. Yeah.
An association trained player it's the same criteria, but with another club in the same association.
Right.
So that'd be Gael Clichy, who was at Arsenal.
All right. Well, they've rejected this proposal anyway, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens next. In the meantime,
there seems to be a lot of dispute over whether they're being harshly treated or not.
What do you think, Barry?
I can see both points of view. I think they knew the rules and broke them anyway, I think, expecting not to be punished. But it seems slightly unfair that they're being treated the same way as PSG, who made absolutely no attempt whatsoever to adhere to the restrictions of financial fair play, whereas City did.
But they're being punished even more severely, PSG.
But I think they flouted the rules.
To a greater extent?
To a far greater extent.
Well,
I think when you look at it, there's going to be no popular support for this, but if you were to look at it from the perspective of a Chelsea fan, anyone connected with Chelsea, they have actually worked very, very hard to keep their spending down by selling out players and not buying expensive strikers when perhaps they might have done. So from their point of view, from Arsenal, from Liverpool's point of view, they're going to be looking at UEFA saying, well, come on, show your teeth, you told us you would. So they need something to happen here, otherwise the whole thing collapses.
Jacob, what do you think?
Well, I think it's interesting, a lot of people saying that, pointing out it is a way of maybe keeping the status quo as well, financial fair play, that you can't have the smaller clubs breaking through the glass ceiling, and it will keep the likes of Manchester United, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, you know, at the top of the pile. At the same time, I don't know, it's just, I don't have a huge amount of sympathy for City, just because I find them and PSG and, you know, Chelsea have kind of complied with it, but I find it all quite dull, these huge billionaires coming in. And
PSG certainly have killed
Ligue 1. Sympathy for them. Yeah, because it kills football. And, you know,
I mean,
you
Premier League's actually been really interesting this year.
Yeah,
but
at the same time, it still kills it for a lot of other teams, and you know, it's not as it's the Premier League is a bit different, because you have richer teams competing with them, but for, you know, certainly PSG, it's just killed a league basically. And you just have to have a billionaire to compete with them.
It's sort of like horse racing, which is more and more it always has been a who has the most money competition, you know. And you have the specter of JP McManus, who coincidentally used to be a co-owner of Manchester United, but who sees a horse win a race that he likes and just buys it, sends it to Cheltenham in his colours, it wins again, and he's sort of, you know, leading it in, looking very pleased with himself, and you're kind of going, well, you know, what have you done to, you just bought the bloody thing, that's all.
I would enjoy it if I was a City fan. I would enjoy watching Aguero and Touré and everything, but at the same time, well, yeah, you should win the league, because you're the richest team by a long way. You still have to do it, but at the same time, it's hard to take a lot of enjoyment out of it from a neutral club.
Well, having said that, it is nice to watch them play.
Yeah, they're great to watch. I have nothing against Man City. I quite like them. I used to go and watch them play way before they had back in the Stuart Pearce days, where they never scored a goal. So I'm sure they're enjoying it a lot.
When Sean Gota retired at Southend United on the last day of the season, City didn't have a game, and about 300 City fans came down to Southend to say goodbye to the GOAT. I've always loved them since then.
Simon Hansen's City.
No, I really like them, but it's just them, and you know, I don't really like that.
One might say that karmatically speaking, they'd earned a bit of respite from the cruel winds of fortune.
I wonder, do any of their fans miss those days of hardship and misery?
I miss it. There was something just glorious about City, that you knew whatever was happening, they could find a way to screw it up. And just for
those days aren't gone yet.
Well, you know, 2012, just for a short time, it looked like they weren't. And then Aguero, 94th minute. And
he won't be playing this weekend.
Oh, maybe. That would be wonderful.
Listen, just one final thing on this FFP, which is that this is a prospect that's going to be facing Liverpool, who've posted, I think the figure is about £100 million worth of losses, pounds worth of losses over the last two seasons. They're going to Europe next season, so they have to present 3 years' worth of figures to UEFA. It means that effectively, if they post another big loss this summer in their transfer activity, I think I'm right in saying that they too will fall foul of the UEFA restrictions anyway.
But surely they could just get some of their fans who post obsessively about net spends on internet forums to present their findings to UEFA's accountants.
There you go.
Headed by Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Now, that's more than enough of that. Let's move on to the bright new dawn at Old Trafford. A well-known podcast producer writes, "We've had a few listeners over the past few weeks." Well, that's good news for a start. Oh, no, it continues. He says, "We've had a few listeners over the past few weeks contacting us about some sound quality issues while listening to the show. Keep it together, producer Ben. If you've noticed any glitches or erroneous static, as opposed to the static that was supposed to be in, producer Ben, please take a minute and send an email to footballweekly.guardian@gmail.com with the subject sound. And in the message, tell us, this bit's underlined, what device you're listening on, which app you're using, and whether you're streaming or downloading. Rest assured, we got all the boys downtown trying to crack the case." Oh, dear. It's a serious business.
It is.
It's a serious business. Now, we haven't even talked about Sunderland West Brom. And that was a mighty game, Barry.
Yeah, I saw the last half hour of it. Connor Wickham didn't score last night. That was very disappointing.
All right. I was. You said don't seem too... have you already done your euphoria over the staying up business? Come on, Barry. This is your chance to show raw emotion and delight.
Yeah, someone was giving out. Like, I saw that because we were saying we'd never cried at football.
Oh, yeah.
And that we should, you know, we were trying to be hard men. It's just a fact. I've never cried at a football match. So, you know.
Deal with it.
I don't know if they want me to lie and pretend I have.
Whatever. Ian, have you ever cried at a football match?
I don't recall doing so, no. I've cried when I've been playing in a football match.
Well, Barry said that too, yeah.
Yeah, but not right. Watching.
Was that because you gave your answer on Monday, I think, no?
Yeah, I got a text from a mate who was listening to the pod and said, "You're a liar because you told me that you had tears in your eyes once." I said, "That's not the same as crying."
Yeah, that is true.
Speck of dust.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, sorry, with regard to Sunderland, it's brilliant they stayed up, but it was, yeah, I kind of expecting that. I thought they would get their point they're required from the last two games.
Right.
Against opposition who weren't up to much. I mean, they were... West Brom seemed to have been awful last night.
Mm.
They can still technically get relegated.
They could do.
Mm-hmm.
If Norwich...
Be a hell of a day at Norwich, wouldn't it?
Certainly would. Norwich, you will recall, are going to be hosting Arsenal, who are facing that tricky transport dilemma of how to get to Carrow Road. And when they get there, they're going to be facing... But that, it would be remarkable, wouldn't it? They need, what, a 19-goal swing? Do you know what? Let's not waste the listener's time with this. Let's just move on. So down go... Fulham and Cardiff, we knew about that. And I'll fired voicing, I think, what everyone was thinking.
Mm.
It was the Michael Jackson statue. You don't mess with it, but you don't mess with stuff like that, do you?
No, when, you're asking for it.
You are.
I don't think anyone was aware it was that lucky when it was there. It never seemed to be the thing. Wait, we stayed up again. Thank God for Michael Jackson. It just Plus now just it flocking seems to have been touch a thing. Yeah, touch his white glove.
Yep.
The Michael Jackson statue had a solid base, unlike the Fulham team.
Ooh.
And it proved a lot more mobile than many of their players.
All right, pretty spin. Have you got a badum tish in your bag of tricks? Lovely. Anyway, so there you go down, and we knew about that. Norwich go down, and kind of knew about that. But they're not down yet, but, you know, et cetera, and so on. Let's have a quick word about Man United, who are heading into the final weekend of the season, a tantalising 3 points behind Spurs in that last Europa League spot. Spurs at the weekend are going to be hosting Aston Villa. You kind of see them maybe picking up a win there in Tim's farewell. Whereas Man United are going to be at Southampton, which is not an easy game. Not an easy game, but they're coming off a morale-boosting grand finale at Old Trafford. Now, this game wasn't on TV. Jacob, were you able to stay across it?
I followed it on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ian, you were listening on the radio, weren't you?
I certainly was.
It was lovely. Doing something else?
Yes. My giant World Cup dossier, which I can tell you more later.
Ooh.
Let's hear about Man United Hull for now.
Yeah, let's go with that.
I'll be honest, I'm more interested in hearing about his World Cup dossier.
No, but Barry, there was so much to talk about.
Well, I believe Manchester United unveiled this new child that nobody ever seems to have heard about. I'm sure they're on fans.
I was going to talk about Marouane Fellaini and how he set up both the first two goals. But yeah, you're right. There's James Wilson, 18 years of age. I don't know where they've been hiding him, but he looks a bit special.
They were nice, well-taken goals as well. You know, they're just proper poacher's efforts with hardly any space to move.
That first one, yeah.
It was really impressive, and he got a nice round of applause at the end.
Why did Giggs take him off when he was on a hat-trick?
I think he wanted to...
jealousy, did he, yeah, it was.
He put himself on, didn't he?
Was that when he put himself on?
I know he had to put himself on.
On Twitter, did he put himself on? Yeah, okay.
But also, he probably wanted the kid to get a big standing ovation from Old Trafford. I mean, you might not ever get that again, given how young players' careers often work out in the Premier League these days.
You're thinking Federico Macheda, aren't you?
one of many. But I thought the best bit about the game was right towards the end, Ryan Giggs had a long-range free kick. The goalkeeper, Hull's spare goalkeeper, Jankopovic, I think, just about managed to tip it over the bar. And was roundly booed for his efforts for denying Giggs a goal in the last minute. It had that sort of testimonial air to it, the game.
All right. Now, there was a rather less happy scene for Phil Jones, and I don't know how this has impact on your World Cup dossier. Is he now marked in pencil?
Well, it's a chalkboard. It's a chalkboard mock-up on pages on my MacBook.
So
it will be easy enough to remove him and replace him, but it's stress I don't need
will
right
it
now.
Be easy for Hodgson to remove him and replace him?
I don't think so. It's also, it looks like it's going to be one of those really annoying injuries that's about 5 weeks. So although he might be back in time for the first game, he won't quite be fit for the first game. It doesn't appear to be a break or a dislocation. They're sending him for more tests. But
it's on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Right.
They're saying there was ligament damage.
Ooh. Yeah.
All right. A fine victory for Man United, and Ryan Giggs saluting the fans for their patience and saying the good times are on their way back. They're on their way back in the chunky Dutch shape of Louis van Gaal. Now, my instinct on this is that it's not going to work out very well. I'm going to come out and call him Arsene Wenger with attitude. In that, he's won a lot, but not for a while. He's won 19 trophies, yeah? But I think I'm right in saying that 15 of those 19 were before the last decade, i.e. before 2004. And since then, he's had a really rocky time. Well, in actual fact, 2002, he failed to get Holland to the 2002 World Cup. And he was far from spectacular successes at Barcelona.
He's got a huge personality to take it on, though. I don't know if you've seen the clip of him telling a Sky... I'm not sure if it's a Sky Sports News reporter. I think he asked, do you know much about Manchester United?
It was Gary Cotterill.
Right. Do you know much about Manchester United? That's a stupid question. Of course I know about Manchester. Yeah, there's a good Vine doing the rounds.
All right.
Yeah.
There's also a good one of him watching what appears to be an under-8s game and celebrating a goal by running the length of the pitch, sort of Mourinho stroke Barry Fry style, which suggests he's going to be quite competitive.
All right.
I wonder if I don't know if it would be good news for Wayne Rooney if he...
No, well, Robin van Persie is one of his trusted lieutenants, so he's probably going to get the nod. Rooney doesn't like being second fiddle either to play behind a striker or to play on the bench instead of a striker, so there could be trouble there, which would be interesting given he's just signed a very, very long-term, very expensive deal.
That is true.
But I do think he's a kick up the arse that they need.
Because, possibly quite literally.
Yeah. He comes with so much built-up authority that there's going to be no question of whether or not he's big enough to do this. He's managed the biggest clubs in the world. And they'll need that as a starting point. He's certainly not going to be the man who's going to describe Liverpool as favourites at Old Trafford, or he's going to flip out about the fixture list when it comes out, assuming that there's some kind of inbuilt bias in the computer. I just think that shift of mentality might be the rocket boost they need. However, I don't think it will last for any more than about 2 years.
It's 4 years since he was in a Champions League final with what wasn't a great Bayern Munich side as well. If they'd won that game, he would have won the treble, wouldn't he?
If he fails to win the league with Manchester United, it'll be the first team he's ever failed to win the league with.
Wow, that's a good stat, isn't it?
I think, in fairness, the work that needs doing at Manchester United isn't the work that Van Gaal's going to be doing anyway. It'll be the work that Woodward does, bringing in 4 or 5 key players. Mm. And I don't think it's going to take much more than a quick phone call of, do you like Luke Shaw? And then that'll be it. And the majority of the work will start on the training field in mid-July.
In other Premier League this weekend news, let's have a quick look through the fixtures, see if anybody wants to jump up and down. Cardiff are hosting Chelsea. Chelsea could still take second. But only if Liverpool would lose at home to Newcastle, or possibly even draw at home to Newcastle.
Yeah, Liverpool could fill their boots there.
Yeah.
Newcastle have been an abject disgrace since January.
Interestingly, the Liverpool game and the Manchester City game gives two managers who are very, very unpopular with their respective sets of fans a huge opportunity to end the season on a high. So I think if they are unable to get their teams up for those games, then that's it.
Really?
I reckon, yeah. Mm. And they should be. As I say repeatedly, I don't like seeing anyone lose their job in any field, but Manchester or football managers, you know, they get reimbursed for failure or whatever. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Allardyce and Pardew. Well, actually, I would be surprised to see Pardew go, but the fans want him out. And I think West Ham fans want Allardyce out, or most of them do. So, yeah, if they can't rouse their teams for these big games, then it probably should go.
Well, yeah, West Ham at Man City, Liverpool hosting Newcastle, Hull have Everton. I mean, these are the other games. Fulham, Crystal Palace. That'll be a sad goodbye to the Premier League at Craven Cottage. Norwich hosting Arsenal, mentioned that. Southampton, Man United, could see some interesting football there. The pressure off for both sides. Sunderland take on Swansea. Spurs, Aston Villa. West Brom against Stoke.
It's all gone, isn't it? We've had 37 amazing weeks, and it ends like this. Now, I mean, I would take 37 amazing weeks just for one bad one at the end, but no one ever thought it was going to end like this.
Well, I thought you'd have the top four being decided on the last day, relegation with a load of teams in it, and three teams on the final day all thinking they could win the league.
Well, it could be that the final...
And they've ruined it.
Dante meets Bosch, pointing out that the most exciting thing could be Stoke and Newcastle swapping places.
That is exciting.
Hmm. Well, let's move on and talk about football elsewhere in the world after this.
Hello, Football Weekly listeners. With the end of the season fast approaching, we've clubbed together with The Guardian Bookshop to bring you an exclusive offer to get 50% off two brand new sports books. If, like Jose Mourinho, you think you can make better decisions than most referees, you can now test your mettle with 160 fiendishly difficult football dilemmas in You Are the Ref Volume 3. And if you fancy something a bit more highbrow, you can also pre-order The Highlights, a collection of the best writing by legendary Guardian sports journalist Frank Keating. To get your copies of The Highlights and You Are the Ref Volume 3 at 50% off, head to guardianbookshop.co.uk and enter the offer code SPORT. You've got until the 23rd of May, and remember, it's only available to you because you listen to Football Weekly. And now, back to the show.
Right, part three starts with Sid Lowe, who's about to get an injection because he's off to Brazil soon. Where are you having the injection, Sid?
You mean which part of the body or whereabouts in the world?
Yeah, where are you taking the needle?
I took two needles yesterday in the arm, and I'm not sure where this one is. I very much hope it's in the arm as well. It's a cunning trick, this, because of course the system is centralised. So I found out yesterday about a player who's going to the World Cup because he happened to be getting his vaccines in the same place.
Wow! So players have already got the nod and they're off getting their jabs.
Well, this is the thing. I genuinely don't know if he got the nod or if he's doing it just in case. It's worth pointing out here it wasn't a Spanish player because of course the vast majority. The Spanish players already had theirs from the Confederations Cup last year.
Sid, who was it?
I can't possibly tell you that.
Which country was he from?
He was Argentinian.
Anyway, Sid, I'm picturing you there in your undershirt, sweating profusely with a belt tightened around your bicep. And
Is he cooking stuff in a teaspoon?
Tell us, if you can, about the excitement coming up this weekend. Now, Real Madrid went and drew 2-2 again against, what was it, Valladolid this time?
No, they drew 1-1.
1-1.
I mean, obviously the net result is the same.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very bizarre one. To try and put this into context of how weird the situation is, Atletico Madrid, last night, their biggest rivals and one of their closest competitors for winning the league title almost certainly fell out of the league title race. And actually, that could be bad news for Atletico instead of good. Atletico Madrid are now in a position where two draws would win them the league, but 3 points won't. Because, of course, the final day is Atletico Madrid against Barcelona. And there was a feeling that some Atleti fans would have preferred Barcelona to to be in a position where they might prefer to lose that game or draw that game to stop Real Madrid getting the win to the league. But because Real Madrid aren't going to win the league now, or probably aren't going to win the league because there have been so many twists, but who knows if they might still, it's now in the hands of both Atletico and Barcelona. Both of them know that winning both games, they will be champions.
Right, but Sid, if they even draw the next two games, and I think maybe you have been cooking something, Atletico Madrid will be winning the title, so I don't see how this could possibly be bad news.
No, because I'll tell you why it could be bad news. Because Atletico Madrid, if they draw the next two win games, they're champions, but they need to draw them both. In other words, winning the first one, even though that's 3 points, not two, will not win them the league.
Right.
And let me explain why it was almost bad news for Atletico Madrid that Real Madrid lost yesterday. Because if, going into the final day of the season, win the league, if they'd won last night and they were going into the final day of the season, there could have been a time during the Atletico Madrid-Barcelona game when Barcelona knew we can't win the league and it's a question of whether Real Madrid win it or Atletico Madrid win it. Because it could be Real Madrid who could win it, wouldn't it be better for us if it was Atletico Madrid who could win
right.
it? So now Atletico, almost certainly, depending on what happens this weekend, will go into the final day playing the Barcelona side who will definitely want to win.
Okay. Are they going to win their games, the pair of them, this weekend?
Well, Atletico Madrid are at home against Malaga, and over the last 3 or 4 weeks, I've learnt not to say yes about anything because it seems there's some really bizarre results happening.
What questions have you been asked of them? Sorry, go on.
Atletico Madrid against Malaga. Atletico Madrid, in theory, at least should win that at home. Barcelona go away to Elche, and you know, 6 or 7 weeks ago, I'd have said, yeah, of course they win that, but Elche still needs something to survive. Barcelona's away results, and in fact, their recent results in general have been so poor that you wouldn't necessarily trust them to win that game. Meanwhile, Real Madrid go away to Celta de Vigo, and that, in theory at least, was a difficult one anyway. I wonder if they now might think that they're out of it.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Well, it's interesting, Sid's almost disclosure about an Argentine there, because one of the few countries to actually reveal their 23-man squads already has been Brazil. And some surprises there. Are there in the fact that there was no room for Kaká, Ronaldinho, all right, Robinho, fair enough. But Philippe Coutinho, is that a bit of a surprise, do you think, Jake?
They've got a lot of players of that type.
Have they?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Tell you what they haven't got a lot of. Centre forwards, because he's only taking three, and two of them are Fred and Joe, and the other one's Hulky.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good,
Who's
is
been
it?
Playing well, apparently, for ABB.
Yeah, but in Russia.
It doesn't count.
I think it's 17 of the 23 players he took to the Confederations Cup last year, which is fairly typical Scolari. He just wants to surround himself with the people he knows and the people he trusts. Hence, so many flair players that we've heard of aren't in there.
Right.
Brazil in the Confederations Cup sort of started in second gear and then got better and better and better until they walloped Spain in the final.
Mm.
So I'm not sure it's that bad a strategy.
All right, producer Ben wants to point out that Neymar's kind of a forward as well.
He counts as a striker.
Well,
he scores their goals.
Right, that's true. And he certainly was the difference in the Confederations Cup, wouldn't he? Take him out of that mix.
Though Fred was very good in the Confederations Cup, so
right,
cool.
Fair enough. They've won 13 of their last 14 matches, so he must know what he's doing, Scolari.
Won a World Cup as well.
Yeah, he certainly has.
Must be quite good.
I wonder if he's given out copies of The Art of War by Sun Tzu, like he did in 2002.
To his players?
Yeah, gave out a copy to every single player.
Did he try that with Chelsea?
I think he might have done, actually. I'm not sure it went
John.
Down particularly well. Yeah. It's a book. You read it.
I don't know. Anyway, look forward to hearing when England's...
The War is quite boring.
It's mainly about terrain.
Yeah.
There are at least three chapters.
Have you read it?
Yeah.
All right, tell us more.
Well, it's... You know, all the basic rules of war. I mean, there are some simple things to take from it that if you're...
Attack is the best form of defence, is that in there?
No, not necessarily. Sometimes defence is the best form of attack. It depends on terrain and the forces you're up against. But there are whole sweeping chapters about getting supply trains across... what's that sinking sand?
Quicksand?
Yeah, quicksand and marshland and things like that. So it's a fascinating book.
I thought it was all meant to be kind of... pretty much extrapolatable to any form of human activity, but this quicksand and supply train business, very specific.
Well, if you see it as a metaphor for something else, like if you're a greengrocer and you need to get your fruit across the city of London,
right?
Then that could be
have
your quicksand.
Have you, as somebody who goes to war in an entirely different sphere of activity, have you been able to use lessons you've learned in your daily life?
Yeah, I was in a queue and it got a bit boisterous, so I hit someone with the spine of the book. I went down. Jenga Tower. So it did really help me.
And okay. Good. Now, or elsewhere in Europe, it's not all settled, Barry. We heard about what awaits in Spain. In France, Barry, the title is now settled after Monaco drew PSG.
They lost against Rennes last night.
But they probably don't regret it because they... Against Rennes? Because they won the title anyway. Ta-da! Anyway, that's terrific. Yeah. A Monaco drawing, and they're saying in France, and this is a surprise, that that Claudio Ranieri won't be there next season.
No. Yeah. I won't hear of it.
In Italy, there's a big battle at the bottom, and there's a big battle for Europa League places as well. All sorts of teams packed in together. At the moment, it looks like Fiorentina and Inter and one other. Is that other going to be Torino, who take on Parma, who are only a point behind them? Is it going to be Milan, who are away at Atalanta? Verona and Lazio engage in a very exciting game, 3-3 earlier in the week, and they're in the mix as well. Should mention Sassuolo beating Fiorentina 4-3, which puts a Berardi again. I don't know if you remember, he was the fellow who scored the hat-trick against Milan, which saw Allegri relieved of his duties. And he scored another hat-trick as they beat Fiorentina midweek.
Bad week for Fiorentina.
Well, yes, it was. Napoli, in the meantime, you recall the unpleasantness in Rome. They've been hit with a 2-game stadium ban over all of that. And with the Gazzetta going big on the fact that, yes, there were negotiations. Well, in other European managerial news, you probably would have seen Clermont Foot, the French second division side, who've named a woman as their manager, Helena Costa.
Yeah, is that... publicity stunt, or no? Do they genuinely rate her and want her to manage?
She's got
teams?
A good record, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she's got a very good record. She was a scout, not just of transfer targets, but of opposition tactics for Celtic, where she had a very, very good reputation. So it's there on merit. She's not the first, though. Apparently there was...
there was Carolina Moracci, who was an amazing striker for the female Azzurri. She scored 105 goals in 153 games, my notes reveal. And she was employed at Viterbese by the infamous Perugia owner, Luciano Gaucci, who was a man who employed a Gaddafi as a player. And
so that was a publicity stunt.
Yeah.
Didn't he try to sack...
Yes,
the South Korea player.
Exactly,
what was it called? Anne.
Yeah. Anne, yeah. And anyway, she was at Viterbese, and her career lasted two long matches before she resigned over the pressure, in inverted commas. Anyway, the French Ligue 2 club, Clermont Foot, say it should help the club enter a new era. One other thing which I forgot to mention about PSG, which luckily we're still talking about France, is the fact that with PSG winning the title, it means that Zlatan Ibrahimovic has now been champion in 10 of the last 11 seasons. That's quite a record. Yeah. Okay. That's it then for today's Football Weekly Extra, and indeed for this season's Football Weekly Extra. We will be back on Monday, though. Do join us then. Meantime, Jacob, many thanks for being part of it today.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ian, Mac and Josh. But we never heard about your World Cup dossier.
God, we'll have to save it for the summer.
Throw us a little teaser,
There's chalkboards, there's stats, there's betting odds, there's everything.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's going to be special.
What will you be doing with it then?
I'll be stripping naked and rolling over and over and over again in it until it enters my body through osmosis.
Has this been inspired by Conor McNamara's, BBC commentator Conor McNamara's notes that you saw?
That man set the bar pretty high.
Why?
Conor McNamara's notes have colours, and there was a guy in the Northeast who has individual flags for the nationality of every player. Hmm. So this old black folder and noughts and crosses, that's not going to be enough anymore. The bar's raised.
Did he draw the flags?
I think he did.
Wow.
Really intricately.
Sam Matterface has pretty impressive commentary notes as well.
Right. Is it true that revelations about David Moyes' state-of-the-art technology bunker have forced you to up your game and go with...
I am thinking about making an investment into some whiteboards.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, then. Anyway, well, great stuff, Ian. Good luck with all that rolling about business. And Barry, I know you'll be cooking up something special, Al Acid, for the World Cup. And we're looking forward to that all getting started. But maybe you're back on Monday before that, I don't know.
I think I am.
All right, super. All right, listeners, have a good weekend. You know you've earned it. We'll be back on Monday. Bye for now.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian Podcast listener, you'll get